Okay, we are at the last parsha of Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Bechukosai, and our learning and lunch today is sponsored by Jake and Karen Abelevitz, Le'ilu Nishmas Jake's parents, Eliyahu ben Abba, and Leah Bas Avraham, and we thank them for their generosity once again. So, Bechukosai is a parsha that deals in large measure with the brachas and the klalas, the blessings and the curses that are offered as consequences for the Jewish people either adhering to or denying their fidelity to the to Dvar Hashem. That's a good chunk of the parsha. It's not the entire parsha, but that is a good chunk of it. Now, I want to focus on one particular part of this story, or part of this admonition, if you will. And it begins on page 708 in the Art Scroll. And the first part of this admonition is the good part. Apparently, I don't know if this accords with psychological or educational theory today, but they started with the carrot and then went to the stick. So, if you will follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them, then all these wonderful consequences will endure, and that is there will be rains in their time, and land will produce its will give its produce, and the tree of the field will give its fruit, etc., etc. And there are lots of wonderful blessings that are offered here in these ensuing psukim. Skip to page 710, and we go from the carrot to the stick. V'imlotish me'uli, v'losasu es kol mitzvos ha'ela, and if you do not listen to me being Hashem, and will not perform all of these commandments, if you consider my decree is loathsome, and if your being rejects my ordinances, So not to fulfill them. Afania says oslachem. So I will react in turn towards you in similar vein, in similar fashion. Vifgadit yalechem behala es hashachefes ve'asakadachas. 17 pasuk says, I will turn my attention against you, and you will be struck down before your enemies. Pasuk 16. Then I will do the same to you. I will assign upon you panic, swelling lesions, and burning fever, which causes eyes to long and souls to suffer. You will sow your seeds in vain, for your enemies will eat it. Afania says, Os lachem, v'ifkarit yalechem behala, es hashachefes ve'es hakadachas. So I just want to just make a quick side point here. This consequence of I will hifkarit yalechem behala, which the Art Scroll translates as panic. Behala is panic. So there's a lot of discussion about what this word behala means, and it is worthy of its own of a shir unto itself. But one approach I saw, which I think is most compelling, is that behala has to do with a state of like constant anxiety. Person is running from place to place, has no rest. You know, your person is constantly being bombarded, and is, as Dr. Pelkovitz has pointed out, there one of the rabbis has developed a prayer for Pizur Hanefesh. You know, that God to give me Pizur Hanefesh means a dispersed soul. In other words, we're all over the place, and we have no ability to focus. And it seems to me that we live in a society which is constant behala. We're always split in our attention, split in our focus, multitasking, constant anxiety, constant behala. Okay, but that's not our focus today. So let's just go on a little further. And I want to notice the psukim and tell me when you notice a change in the tone of the psukim here. Okay, so we're going to Just read it to yourselves. You know, just we're up to Pasuk 16, 17. I don't have to read all of these curses out together. And right, the minhag in the shuls is to read for the Baal Kori to read it in maybe a little bit of a lower voice or maybe a little bit more quickly. But if you read it to yourselves, I want to ask you, the first pasuk that you see that shifts its tone away from curses.
Rabbi, what's the
parsha? Bichukosai, and we're on page 710, where the consequent punishments begin. Okay.
The rest of it don't look so appealing to me.
Well, we'll see in a second. So, what did you want to say, Judy?
I don't know what she said. It was change of scene. And then there?
Yeah, okay. So Pasuk 42, Pasuk Membe seems to be a significant change here. Chapter 26, Pasuk 42. Right? We're going curse after curse, punishment after punishment. Really, really tough stuff. And then Pasuk 42, V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac. V'af es brisi Yitzchak, v'af es brisi Avraham, ezkor v'haaretz ezkor, and I will remember the land. V'haaretz te'azev mehem, and the land will be bereft of them, and it will be appeased for all its sabbaticals, having become desolate of them, and they must gain appeasement for their iniquity, because they were revolted by my ordinances, and because their spirit rejected my decrees. So that change in tone seems to be very short-lived. But this, right? V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, right? I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham, and I will remember the land. And it says the land will be bereft of them, and it will be appeased for its sabbaticals having become desolate. But despite all this, while they will be in the land of their enemies, I will not have been revolted by them, nor will I have rejected them. So, it's a little bit of hope. It's a little bit of hope here. I would agree to that. Question is, that we're going to take a look at on this pasuk when we see the shift. The shift begins. Zacharti es brisi Yaakov, v'af es brisi Yitzchak, v'af es brisi Avraham Izkor. So if you just read that pasuk and read it carefully, are there any questions that come to your mind just, reading this pasuk? Okay, so, well, number one, thank you, Judy.
First of all, why is it Yitzchak, it should be Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov?
Okay, v'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, v'af Yitzchak, v'af Avraham. So one question is, why is it the reverse order? Okay.
And the second question would be:
to remember the covenant of Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avraham. Right. So you're suggesting that that's a reverse order. Why is that reverse order?
I guess in the answer by the second thing, why is it off as we see? So maybe he's starting with the lowest with Yaakov, and then there's some deep meaning in the af, the twice af brisi Yitzchak af. It doesn't feel like it should be in there.
Okay.
And also the eskar ve'eretz eskar like that.
Right.
Redundant language at the end.
Okay. To remember the land.
Well, I remember then. I will remember the land. It's just.
Okay, so a couple questions here. Number one is the reverse order. It says, remember the covenant of Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avraham. And ostensibly, it should be Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, assuming we're doing this in historical order. It really, that's the first covenant is was made with Avraham. So why is the reverse order? That's question one. Of course, that begs the question, what is the order here? Right? Number two is, says, not only, I remember the covenant with Yaakov, even the covenant of Yitzhak and even the covenant of Abraham. So what does this mean of pointing out that even Yitzhak and even Abraham? I should say, I'll remember the covenant of Yaakov, Yitzhak, and Abraham, assuming this order. Okay, third question, which we're not going to deal with today, and that is, what does this last piece over here have to do with anything about remembering the land? Okay. And then the fourth question, which is, I think, the first thing that Judy pointed out, is the word Yaakov, written in the Pasuk in Hebrew, it says, V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov. And Yaakov is written here in Hebrew, Yod, Aleph, Kuf, Vav, Vet. And the way Yaakov is ordinarily written is without that vav. So Yaakov is ordinarily written Yud Ayin Kuf Vav. All right. So there's an extra, seemingly an extra letter over here. Okay. So these are four questions on the pasuk, and we're going to deal with questions 1, 2, and 4. We're going to leave question 3 off on the side. If it becomes relevant to, you know, any particular point, so, you know, maybe we'll reference it, but other than that, that's not going to be our topic for today. Okay, so let's, we're going to address these questions not in a linear fashion, but hopefully overall getting to an end point here. So if we sort of, you know, weave in back and forth, that's how we're, it's not just, you know, random chaos. Okay, so let's take a look at the pasuk. You have it on your sheet, or you can look at it on your in your chumash, and we're going to take a look at Rashi. So Rashi says the following. Rashi addresses 2 points here. It's on top of page 2 in your sheets, or in your, you can take a look at it in the chumash. Lama nimnu achoranis. Rashi asks, very first question, why is it written in reverse order? Kolomar, that is to say, this is what it means. Well, first of all, before we take a look at Rashi, is this a defensible order? In other words, it's not, if you assume a historical order, so it's not an historical order. Can you make an argument? Can you make an argument for, you know, writing it in this reverse order, or what we think is a reverse order? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
If you're talking about what's going to happen, and then you're saying, I'll remember not only the most recent bridge, but the one before that and the one before that.
Okay, right,
and
so...
That explains the alpha also.
Right, okay, so not only will I remember, you know, the most recent Brit, but I'm going back in time, and I'm going back to your grandfather, to your great-grandfather, you know, all of that is within the realm over here. You want to say something? Yeah.
That was one of the things I was going to say. But also, they remember Yaakov. I mean, they know the relationship. That's something that they've had in there. It's not ancient history, is it?
Right. Yaakov is more cut, even though they're not exactly same generation, but he's more reality. Than the great grandfather, the great great grandfather. Yeah.
So, but I'm saying, you know, they know if.
Right, there's a certain depth saying it this way. To say, you know, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov would be right historically, but laying it within a more present connection to our reality, and then deepening it and giving it heft and weight is maybe even more powerful. Yeah, Norm.
It might not make a difference in the order, but is there something different about about the covenant with each? Is the covenant changed with any?
Right. Okay. So that's excellent point. I think the covenant is pretty much the same, but the at least in rabbinic tradition, Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avraham each have their own sort of unique qualities, and each one of them is a paradigm. So the relationship of the covenant between Hashem and Avraham, even if the covenant is the same, it has a unique quality to it because of the uniqueness of Avraham, the uniqueness of Yitzchak, and the uniqueness of Yaakov. So that is a fair point to make. Anybody else? Okay, so let's take a look at what Rashi says. Rashi says, "Lamna nimnu achronis." Why are they in reverse order? Kolomar, "Kedai hu Yaakov hakatan lekach, v'imeno kedai hare Yitzchak imo, v'imeno kedai hare Avram imo shehu kedai." V'lama lo nemra zechira b'Yitzchak, ela afaro shel Yitzchak nira lefanai tzavur umunach al ha'mizbeach. Says v'zacharti, I will remember the bris of Yaakov, and even the covenant of Yitzchak, and even the covenant of Avraham, I will remember. So Rashi says, you have Yaakov is there in your stead, in your standing for you, and if for whatever reason his standing is not sufficient to stand up for you and to provide merit for you and to be a good to plead on your behalf. So go back to Yitzchak. And for whatever reason, that isn't enough to give you what is necessary, I will go back to Avraham. So Rashi is suggesting that Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avraham is Avraham is like the source, and we might not need the power hitter of Avraham. Yaakov might be sufficient, but if for whatever reason is not sufficient, we're going to bring in Yitzchak, and if he's not sufficient, we're going to bring in Yaakov as well to serve as a v'zacharti. I will remember the covenant and the relationship with these forefathers, and that will stand in your good favor. But Rashi makes another point here. He says, "I will remember Yaakov, and I will remember Avram." Why doesn't it say, "I will remember Yitzchak"? It says, "V'zacharti brisi Yaakov, v'af Avraham iskor." But it doesn't say anything about remembering Yitzchak. And so here, Rashi makes the comment, because Yitzchak is ever-present in God's mind, as it were. Afaro shel Yitzchak nira lefanai tzavur umonach al mizbeach. The ashes of Yitzchak, right, who was supposed to be the burnt offering, are ever visible before me as though they were lying upon the altar. In other words, Yitzchak was actually fastened to the altar. Now, he wasn't killed and he wasn't burned on the altar, but his presence is so, his sacrifice, his involvement was so powerful that it doesn't even require a zechira, as it were. It is not remembering; he is present. So that's a side point. Okay, so we have here the idea of the reverse order now, and the idea of af, and these go together. If not Yaakov, even Yitzchak, even Avraham. Take a look at the second Rashi here on the bottom of the page. Rashi says, "B'chamisha mekomos nichtav male." There are five times in Tanakh where the word Yaakov is written male, meaning full and complete. It can either be written male with the vav, or it can be written chaser without the vav. And usually, it is written male with the vav. In this case, it's written chaser without the vav. In this case, it's written male with the vav. Why? Says Rashi. In five places, the scripture says the name Yaakov is written plenty, and the name Eliyahu. What happened here?
Oh, you know what? It's on. We skip that Hebrew and go to the next page. It says.
Oh, they stapled it incorrectly. Okay, so go to page 3. Just look on your. They just stapled it backwards. Okay, so it was written defectively in five places. So Rashi says that you have the name Yaakov is written five times in Tanakh, full with the vav, And the name Eliyahu is written five times without the Vav. It's just written as Eliyah. So continues Rashi. And to intimate that Yaakov, as it were, took one letter of Eliyahu's name as a pledge that at some future time, he, Eliyahu, should come and proclaim the good tidings of his descendants' redemption, meaning that Eliyahu would come and herald the coming of the Mashiach. So Rashi is making a very interesting point here. Yaakov is written here with the Vav, corresponding to the missing Vav in Eliyahu. And apparently Yaakov took the Vav from Eliyahu and put it in his name here. And this indicates that Yaakov took this Vav as a pledge.
And why five times?
Well, we'll get to Vav in a second. As a pledge, Eliyahu is the one who's going to herald the Mashiach. He says, I'm holding on to this Vav until Mashiach comes.
And why the Vav?
Okay, so what is this? So Briny asks all good questions. What's the meaning of five times? What's the meaning of Vav per se? And what does it mean that he took the Vav? What is this? What's the idea here? So let's start with a basic storyline over here. The storyline is that there are Eliyahu is written absent the Vav. Yaakov is written with the Vav. Yaakov takes the Vav from Eliyahu as a pledge until Eliyahu comes and heralds the coming of Mashiach. What does this mean in any way, shape, or form?
In Tanakh, he took his Vav in certain...
There are five times in Tanakh where Eliyahu is written without the Vav, and there are five times where Yaakov is written with the Vav.
Maybe those times that were in Tanakh where he's taking Eliyahu's Vav, I'm assuming the Jewish people at that point were not.
The question is, what is the significance of his taking a Vav from Eliyahu's name?
Those five times.
Oh, right. No, that's a
right. Okay, so it's a good one way to look at this would be to take a look at those five times and to analyze what's going on in each one of them. That's not where I'm going with it today. That would be that would be a valuable thing to do. Right, but you could see what's going on. I'm looking at from a more meta perspective. Right? What is the relationship, right? Eliyahu is described as the heralder of Mashiach.
Right.
Yaakov, what's Yaakov's sort of life story? Yaakov's life story, is his life story a story of redemption or a story of exile? Yaakov's life story is the story of exile. He runs away from his father's home. He's got, with Lavan. He's ultimately going down to Egypt. Yaakov...
It's also the beginning of
Yaakov's overall trajectory, his overall life story, I would argue, maybe disagree, his overall life story is the story of exile. Even when he beats that mystery man, that is, when he's running off into exile, right? So he does beat him, but that is an exile story, which is, I'm not denying your point, I'm just pointing to the story of exile. Eliyahu is, the heralder of redemption. Pasuk in Malachi says, Hine Eliyahu, Ba Yom Hashem, Agadol V'Narav, Eshev Leibavos Albanim, V'Leibanim Alavosam, Eliyahu will come, the time of Mashiach. So what's the point over here that Rashi is saying? Yaakov, right, we are in the middle of the story of, or we're in the middle of the psukim about the Jewish people not listening to God and having negative consequences. And that ends with, and I will remember the bris with Yaakov. And Rashi says, and he took a pledge from Eliyahu, his Vav, and he's not giving it back until he heralds the time of Mashiach. Quite a mystery here.
I think it's poetic.
Okay, what do you mean?
Because that's part of the process, the whole thing. Is that eventually, God's remembrance will eventually lead to Mashiach.
God's remembrance will eventually lead to Mashiach.
Land, eventually, we're going to get towards that, to that point.
So when we say that Yaakov is holding on to the Vav of Eliyahu, What's the idea? He's holding on to the vav.
That's the ultimate redemption. That's the ultimate remembrance. God remembering His people.
Right. So when Yaakov holds on to the vav of Eliyahu, he's in essence saying he's holding on to the message of redemption. Right. So he's holding on to its redemption, and so if that's the case, that he's holding on to the to redemption in this vav, he's holding on as a pledge, will not return it until the time of redemption. So the next question is, which Brian asked, is what is the vav represent? What is the he's holding on to the vav, and somehow this is about redemption. What? Right. So, but is there significance in the vav per se? Why is he holding the vav over his head? Right. He's holding. Okay. All right.
So what? Was you put? Why is it just to establish the relationship between Yaakov and Eliyahu?
Why not the
and, and Yaakov, as we learned at one time, was the beginning of Judaism. Yeah. It was nothing until Yaakov actually became Yisrael. So you're starting with Yisrael, Yaakov. The very beginning until the end, which is the redemption. So that's the whole cycle.
Okay. All right. So let's plow a little forward on this. Take a look at Rabbeinu. Take a look at the Rabbeinu Bechaya, which is on page number four. Page number four. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says the following: I shall remember my covenant with Yaakov. Here the Torah lists the names of the patriarchs in the reverse order of their historical roles. Remember I told you we're sort of weaving in and out here. A midrashic approach is as follows. When mentioning the memory of Avraham and Yitzchak, the Torah adds the word af to signify that both these patriarchs had also sired and raised Ishmael and Esav respectively, thus causing God to become angry. Af, vayichar af, meaning that God become, it's a anger. Af is a part of the idiom for anger. Vayichar af, God became angry. In connection with Yaakov, that the word is missing, seeing all his children remained true to their father's teaching to the Torah values. So it says, I will remember the covenant with Yaakov and Af Yitzchak and Af Avraham. So from this perspective, actually, the reason it's in reverse order is not because Yaakov is the weakest of this link. Actually, he's the strongest. He's precisely the strongest. Because Avraham had a Yishmael, Yitzchak had an Esav, and Yaakov had the 12 Shvatim. He didn't have, they had their problems, but for sure, but they didn't go off into paganism, right? So from this perspective, let's think about this. Yaakov is, so we have the reverse order. We have the reason for the af. He's the strongest link in the chain. So now we say that Yaakov is taking the vav from Eliyahu. He's saying, I'm holding on to this vav of redemption. So in light of what we just said, perhaps what it means is that Yaakov is and this doesn't explain the vav per se, saying that Yaakov is the one who has the, who is shalem. He is whole and complete in the sense that he was able to pass on the Mesorah, the tradition, to his to the next generation. And that is the key to being able to get to redemption, which is passing it on, and hopefully either we'll get to the redemption or the next generation will do what it takes. But what is necessary is the Mesorah, is the passing on of the tradition, which connects one generation to the next. What is the role of the vav in Hebrew language? It's a vav hachibur. The vav is the and. The vav is that which connects. Right? The and, right? In Hebrew, you want to say, I'm going to do this and this and this. I'm going here and I'm going to do that. Vav is the vav hachibur. It's the vav of connection. So Rashi says that Yaakov is going to take the vav from Eliyahu. Eliyahu represents redemption. We're taking this vav, or this vav of connection, of right? And Yaakov, who is the strongest link, is going to pass this on generation to generation to generation to overcome the exile. The pathway to getting from exile to redemption is the vav. Right? I mean, this is a, I don't know if it's poetic, metaphorical, whatever you want to say, but Rashi is looking at this vav in the, you know, and ostensibly citing the tradition, the vav in Yaakov, and saying this is not just it's not just by coincidence, and by drawing this connection between the missing vav in Eliyahu and the present vav in Yaakov, is drawing a connection between the hope for redemption and the process of how to get there. Yeah.
Oh. The first time we see Yaakov's name, does it have a vav?
The very first time, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think this is the only time in Chumash where we have the vav, and the other four examples are in Navi and the Ksuvim. Right?
Would there be any connection between Yaakov and Masor to Yahushua, who also had who didn't have the vav?
Maybe, but that's not the connection that they're drawing here.
Further that, it was inferred also in regard to the Eretz, because Yahushua was the one who conquered Eretz Yisrael.
Right. Okay. All right. So fair enough. Okay. So that's point number one. Now go to page three. Right. Again, these are sort of out of. Okay, so Rabbeinu Bechaya. Okay, take a look at the Chizkuni on the. Take a look at the Chizkuni on the bottom of the page here. He says, "Lafisha mitaso shlema lo ne'amar bo afu lafisha kol shenosav hayu bevris yizkiru tchila." I will remember my covenant with Yaakov, seeing that none of Yaakov's children were disloyal. Tari did not use the word af anger. We just did that. Top of page five. So the Chizkuni now says, personally, what I believe. This is he's writing about himself. He says, this is what I think to be the case. Okay, personally, I believe that the word af, used in connection with God's remembering Yitzchak and Avram, respectively, is an allusion to the attribute of justice, such as in Genesis 18:23, ha'af. Tispet tzadik im rasha. God says, Avram says to God when he is pleading on behalf of Sodom, ha'af tispet tzadik im rasha. Are you going to sweep up the tzadikim and the rasha? You're going to destroy Sodom. Ha'af tispet tzadik im rasha. You're going to let everybody be destroyed. Maybe there are 50 tzadikim in the city. Maybe there are 30, 40, 30, 10. Right, so af has to do with the mida, the attribute of justice, of God's justice. So now, if that is the case, so let's look at our model here. Hashem says, "Zacharti, I will remember the covenant with Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avraham." The af Yitzchak, the af Avraham. What is the idea of the af? The idea of the af is the mida, the characteristic of justice. Not about anger. It's about justice. Both Avraham and Yitzchak had an equal part in the binding of Yitzchak, each one of them suppressing their natural instincts. Avraham suppressed the father's instinct by demonstrating obedience to God and being prepared to slaughter his son, whereas Yitzchak suppressed his natural survival instinct by not challenging his father, who made him the victim of God's commandment, and by submitting him to be slaughtered. When the Torah wrote on that occasion that they both walked together, Avram and Yitzchak walked towards the Akedah, the point of that statement is to show that both father and son shared equally in the merit. They both had the same thing in mind, namely to submit to the attribute of justice. Now, in our verse, the name Yaakov is spelled with the extra letter Vav, something quite unusual, which we find only five occasions in the Bible. This corresponds to the five other places where the name Eliyahu, normally spelled with a vav, is spelled with the letter vav at the end of his name, is spelled with the letter missing, i.e. Eliyah. A According to Rashi, which we said already, what all this means is that Yaakov took a letter from Eliyahu's name as a guarantee, a collateral, that the prophet would make an appearance on earth announcing the redemption of the Jewish people. So, let's put this all together. Yaakov-Eliyahu connection. I'm taking the Vav. Right? I'm holding the Vav. I'm holding the Vav to hold out for redemption. What is the pathway to get from Yaakov to Eliyahu? What's the pathway from exile to redemption? The pathway is to remember the covenant. V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, v'af brisi Yitzchak, v'af brisi Avraham. That is the notion of justice. The notion of justice. That's what the pathway from exile to redemption is. That the rabbis are suggesting here, that in the context of this pasuk, which talks about remembering the covenant is about justice. Now, this letter vav here is this added vav here is creating, in the rabbis' conception, a connection between Yaakov exile and Eliyahu redemption. How do we get from the Yaakov of exile to the Eliyahu of redemption? It is through the af. It is through the notion of an affinity, fidelity to justice. Yeah, what do you want to say?
How would you commit that to slaughtering your kid is somehow contributing to the attribute of justice? That seems to fly in the face of the attribute of justice.
Okay, so what we're saying is the divine justice. Now, why that, to discuss the notion of God giving a command to slaughter his child. So we'll discuss that when we do Parshas Bereishis at the beginning of next year. But for the purposes of our discussion, this is about submitting to divine justice. And the prophets, during the time that they were prophesying, was one of the major themes was, aside from Avodah Zarah, was the issue of not submitting to divine justice. In other words, putting their own sense of what is just and not just before divine justice. And that led to a corrupt society, right? A corrupt society where taking advantage of the poor and a society which took advantage of the poor and the weak. So perhaps what's going on here by the rabbis making this connection in this context here of Yaakov and Eliyahu in the context of the bris of Af Yitzchak and Af Avraham are making the point to the listener, to the audience, that if you want to get from Yaakov to Eliyahu, if you want to get from exile to redemption, you have to do something about that, and that is to have fidelity to the system of divine justice, not your own sense, because your own sense of divine justice can spiral off into all types of corruption. It has to be a submission to a divine justice. Yeah.
This brings up something else, but I had the same problem that you
have. All right. Well, this isn't the last piece, so you can put this one in parentheses and say I didn't like that one. Okay. So
it's only mentioned by Yitzchak and Avraham.
Right, that is true. That doesn't explain why it's not by Yaakov. It doesn't, and only by Yitzchak and Avraham. That's in this model of what. Okay, yeah.
Something in the back of my head. The connection between Yaakov, what's between Yaakov and Eliyahu, is Yitzchak's fire. And what is Yitzchak's fire? Has to do with Pesach. And what does it have to do with Pesach? Pesach it has to do with Eliyahu. And then we have this thing in the even if I wouldn't do this, I would still do that. Huh?
Yeah.
And it lists all the different things, from a small thing to a more important thing. Exactly what we did here.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Okay, so we have sort of two basic points thus far. One basic point is that the pathway from Yaakov to Eliyahu, from from exile to redemption is through the Vav HaChibor, right? The connection of passing down the Mesorah, Yaakov being the strongest link in the chain, not the weakest link in the chain, and to make it through exile requires the Vav, the connection from generation to generation, passing it down. Number two, what are you passing down? You're passing down the Midah of justice, of submitting to divine justice. And maybe, I'm just thinking, you know, off the top of my head right now, and maybe submitting to divine justice is about is that the exile itself is an expression of divine justice, and rather than fight against the exile, we have to do something to change in order to undo the exile. In other words, instead of saying that the exile is unfair, right, and railing against the unfairness of exile, we submit to the divine or understand that this is divine justice, and it is within our power to undo the exile and transform it into redemption by pursuing justice. Okay, all right. So that's number two. Take a look here at not familiar with this perusha called Chumash Anach. Right. So the Chachamim who are speaking and interpreting this and offering this. This interpretation, if you will, I don't want to call it an interpretation, this tradition, are clearly speaking to the post-Chorban, generations, right? Okay. Now, take a look at the bottom of page five, which we're on, right? And I'm not familiar with his parish. It's called Chumash Anach. I'm not sure who it is or what it is. But he writes the following. Says Efshar Latet Ta'am Lamashinichtav Yaakov Malevav. Perhaps we can give a reason for Yaakov written with the Vav here. The Amru Razal that the Chachamim teach us, Esav Haya Shmo Asui. Alright, Esav's, this is another teaching of Chazal. Esav's original name, it was Asui, which with a Yud at the end. Okay, which means complete, final product. Shayanasa v'nigmar, that when Esav was born, right, he was born with, developed, right, he had hair, so he was like developed, right. V'yakov hayaroi likra ekev, and Yaakov was, should have been called ekev, which means heel, right. Al shame of Yado Chesus be'ekev Esav. He was holding onto the heel of his brother. V'lokach yud me asui. So the yud from asui, Esav, transfers. Yeah, doing a lot of transpositions today. Hold on. V'nikra Yaakov, and he's now called Yaakov. V'nishar Esav, and Esav is now Esav. V'la'asid lavo, and in the future, right, the time of the Messianic age, the time of the time of redemption, lasid lavo, yikach vav me Esav. The vav will move over from Esav. V'yishaer ace. It's with an ayin. V'yihyeh Yaakov male, and Yaakov then will be full. Okay, the F shar shenichtav kan male ba mekomos os vav lirmo shazi Hashem vav shalem sheyimcha malik. So that's a separate point. So he says here the following. There's another teaching of Chazal that Yaakov's name, right? Really, Yaakov is Ekev Ayin Kof Yud. He was holding onto the heel of his brother. Yaakov becomes Yaakov by taking the Yud from Esav. And ultimately, la'asid lavo, in the final time of redemption, you'll have the vav from Esav as well.
The yud.
The yud and the vav from Esav. So hold on a second. We're not taking this on a literal level here. Okay. But there's a point that's being made over here. Let's go back to our essential framework. Our framework is that we're talking about, God remembering after the punishment, right? All these punishments, v'zacharti, and I'm going to remember the covenant, right?
And the rabbis say that by writing Yaakov with the vav over here, this is somehow connecting Yaakov to Eliyahu, which is exile to redemption.
Yeah, because
well, one second. And we're saying, how do you get from exile to redemption? So we had two processes how to get there, and one of them you liked, one of them you didn't. But one question is. Can we look at the letter above itself? Right? The first we said about connecting generation to generation. So here he says, letter Vav, actually, and the letter Yud, but we're focused on the Vav now, is going to transpose from Esav to Yaakov in the time of redemption. So the time of redemption, Yaakov is going to have the Yud and the Vav from Esav, and that's going to be the time of full redemption. What does that mean? What's the? It's sort of like the idea that is being, is about transposing letters. Is that what it's about? That when you go to when you send your kid to elementary school at the time of Mashiach, they're going to say, write Yaakov with the vav. Is that what it means? And I think it's more than that.
Yep, you can talk about the vav is a reference to what this Chazal is saying.
Okay. So Chazal are saying that at the point in the future, the Vav of Esav will transpose to Yaakov. Yaakov is whole and complete with the Vav of Esav.
Does it have something to do, probably not, of unifying?
Usually when you say probably not, Judy, it's usually correct.
Okay, I'm about 50-50. About unifying the two brothers.
Okay, yeah, go on.
That becomes symbolic of all people. That he has to take something of Esav within him in order for a redemption to happen. That's all I mean.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
all right.
He did that in when there's a problem. Why is Issa there, Yaakov, at what point?
Now,
so that was Esav was all along Issa there.
Right.
Yaakov was never, he was Ishtar.
Right.
So when he was one time referred to, they came out of the field. He already took that component from himself.
Right. So building on that, anybody else? Like what saying that Yaakov in the time of Mashiach is going to have the vav of Esav. So, anybody else? All right. So I want to build on what Judy said there for a moment, and that is that. So Esav represents a lot of bad stuff in Jewish tradition, right? But there are two ways to look at the midas, the character traits, if you will, of Esav. You either take those things and you cut them off and you get rid of them, and like a cancer, it's evil, and you just get rid of it. And I think what the point that they're making here is that actually, the way to get from Yaakov to Eliyahu, from exile to redemption, in the fullness of that, is to take all of life experience, not just the stuff that's classically spiritual, not just the stuff that's classically religious, but to take the Esav stuff of life and to raise it up. Not to reject Esav, right? Abraham and Yitzchak, each one had a son that was rejected, right? Not to reject, but to embrace and raise up. That's the Asid Lavo. That's the time of redemption. We're able to take all aspects of life and not cut things off and cut things away and hide, but rather to take all aspects of life and raise them up to their higher spiritual potential. So Esav is not in this sense, an impediment to redemption. Co-opting Esav and raising Esav, whatever the midas of Esav are, aggressiveness, whatever those midas are, it's not about slicing them off. It's about creating a whole, complete, shalem, a whole, complete life experience. Right? Where we take the material of life and raise it up to spiritual. We take the stuff which we classically think is negative and we find the points of beauty in it or the point of value in it and raise it to a spiritual plane. Take the stuff which we ordinarily see as negative in life and find the value points in them and use them and make them valuable. It is what if I can borrow from Rav Kook speaks about this, and sort of other mystical truth, people who are involved in the more mystical Kabbalistic side of Judaism, that really everything stems from all of life stems from one point of origin. And the stuff that looks to us as bad is not necessarily bad, because it all comes from a root, a godly root. Without God giving it a life, it cannot exist. So the point is not to cut off these parts of life, or parts of ourselves even. The idea is to take all of ourselves and transform even the parts of ourselves that we think are maybe less than savory, and take those qualities that we have that we would rather just not have, and find the point value point and use them in a positive, uplifting, divine way. Yeah, Chaim.
Substitute the word Esau for the word Hitler, and tell me how we do this.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Because once you throw that in, it becomes all emotional and irrational, and you can't. So I can't have a rational discussion in an irrational environment.
Aesop is too far in the distance for us to be able to use.
Define how he's too far in the distance. What is too far in the distance? If taken away from Hitler what is too far in the distance about
it? I'm saying this concept of taking something that is so dastardly in life, and there are things that are that way in life, how do you take that and uplift it? Whatever, substitute whatever you want. How do you do it?
So it's not about the behaviors. It's about the underlying, midas, right? So, again, I don't want to go down the Hitler route. It's about the Mida. Hitler didn't have to be Hitler. He didn't have to be a Russia, right? You could imagine. Well, he was a poor painter, right? But you could imagine somebody using their powerful gifts of persuasion, whatever, to better mankind. Right, so it's not about the behaviors, but murder is not good, right? We're not talking about actions and behaviors. We're talking about underlying character traits and potentials, right? And what I think we often do is we take we say, well, somebody who displays this type of personality, or this type of character trait. It's or even if I have this type of character trait, or I have this type of thing. So instead of figuring out what the value point in it is, we just sort of shun those things, and that is and that's cutting off. That's cutting off who we are. You can't be half a person. God made us as whole people. In Christianity, the sexual drive is inherently negative. Seems to me, I'm not an expert in Christian theology, but it seems to me that it's an inherently negative thing. We don't look at it that way. We look at that human experience that is something which should be elevated, and not cut off. Yeah.
I heard a darshan one time that the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov is actually in the words. That what should be is that Jacob, he was soft in certain ways, but there are times that you have to have strength. So you're combining both attributes of Yaakov and Esav together.
Right, that is correct. Now Esav, right, in our tradition, Esav took those qualities and used them in negative ways. But the point of the matter is, it's not about It's not about the underlying midah. It's not about the actions. It's not the behaviors. The behaviors, if a person murders, then that's inherently a bad thing. But the question is, what are the underlying character traits that can be sublimated, if you will? Right. Final point within 1 minute. I gave you a second sheet there, the Maharal. So the Maharal says the following. Right, and do this in 60 seconds or less. Just what page is it? Because I have the actual book. What? All right, what page is that? Resh Ayin Aleph. Okay, so look on the bottom of your page over here. That's where it says Gur Aryeh underneath Unkelus. Right, that's the Parish of the Maharal. Footnote Memtes. Yaakov Natal Mishmael. Parish Shareim. Kosav Hatab. Let's see. Here. So he says the following. Go down and see where it says in that little paragraph 141. It's a footnote 141 inside. So that's where we're going to start off. The Yesh Chamisha Etzbos Bekaf Hayad. There are five fingers of the hand. Lekach Natal B'Chamish Mekomos Havav Shel Eliyah. That's why Briny. It's five times that Yaakov takes the pledge. He's making like a vow, like when you put your hand on the Bible, right? So that's the metaphor of the five times. Shu Chamisha. Flip the page. Chamisha Etzbaos Heim. Etzel Yaakov, the ha'etzba dome levav, and the finger is like a vav. So you have five fingers. You're taking a pledge. He's making a vow, right? Raise my hand. Lachen havav min Eliyahu chaser. Therefore, the vav from Eliyahu is missing. The hinasuna liYaakov, and it's given over to Yaakov. Now go to the next paragraph. V'ta'am. V'ta'am ha'medrash hazeh ramaz lecha. What's the idea behind this medrash that Yaakov is taking the vav of Esav? What's the idea behind this medrash? Eliyahu lo nivra rak shigael et Yisrael. Eliyahu's whole purpose in life is to redeem the Jewish people. L'davar zeh omed, and that's why he exists. U'mechevan shu omed lazeh, and since that's his purpose, v'lo haya zeh adayin, and he has not yet fulfilled his purpose, l'fikach natal os me'osiel shmo shel Eliyahu le'eravon etzel Yaakov. So Yaakov is holding on to the vav. Eliyahu is missing. He is incomplete until he fulfills his mission of redeeming the Jewish people. Kolomar, Eliyahu ein shmo shalem. Eliyahu's name is incomplete because his mission is incomplete. Mipnei shekol atzmo omed ligolas Yisrael b'nei Yaakov. That the whole his whole purpose is to redeem the Jewish people, and therefore lachein. Os mishmo nimtza etzel Yaakov, and therefore a letter of his name is Yaakov is holding onto it, and therefore he says lefishu mashlem eshem Eliyahu kishigol espanav, and Yaakov will give him back his vav when he fulfills his mission. In other words, Eliyahu is incomplete. His name is incomplete because his mission is incomplete. His essence is incomplete until such time as he fulfills his mission. Only when he fulfills his mission will his name be complete. We all have a mission in life, and our names, metaphorically speaking, represent our mission. Just like, and the way we get from exile to redemption is by making by fulfilling our purpose, by fulfilling our shame, our name, our purpose, our essence, our mission. When we fulfill our mission, Eliyahu can fulfill his mission. When our name is complete, then his name can be completed as well. And I saw that Rabbi Kasher pointed out that Be'er Mayim Chaim says that it's not just that Eliyahu is incomplete, even Hashem himself is incomplete. As long as we are in exile, as long as this mission is incomplete, God himself as though is incomplete. So if we want to go from exile to redemption, just in summary, we saw three basic approaches. From exile to redemption, from Yaakov to Eliyahu, is the Vav, passing on the Mesorah generation to generation, from the strongest link in the chain, Yaakov, or the idea of having a fidelity to divine justice, or this idea of Yaakov being the Vav of Esav, that in order to go from exile to redemption, we have to bring our entire life experience and all of the world, or like you said, all of humanity into it. We can't just cut people off or cut part of ourselves off. We have to bring everybody into it. And that's what we'll go from. That's what will transform exile to redemption. And the last thing that we said was that the missing Vav is an indication that Eliyahu himself is incomplete until the redemption comes. And we also have to fulfill our missions. We fulfill our mission and make our name complete. Eliyahu's name will be complete as well. We'll pause here.
Okay. Sorry, I went a few minutes over.